Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Oh, yes, it's time once again for your weekly, bi-weekly Gitmo Nation audio publication 101.
This is No Agenda.
Coming to you from Mayfair in the lovely capital of the United Kingdom, that's London, from an undisclosed hotel location. I'm Adam Curry.
And from where it rained last night with huge drops, Wisconsin-sized ones here in northern Silicon Valley, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill
in the morning.
It's not quite in the morning, but it's morning somewhere.
It's always in the morning.
It's morning somewhere. Yeah, correct. Hey, Johnny, how you doing?
So it rained here last night. Woke me up twice. It was this just a spotty rain, but it wasn't normal rain. It was these, and I thought it was hail. It was so loud.
Wow.
It was, and there was a lot of electricity in the air, so the drops got really huge. I've never seen drops this big at 4 in the morning or any other time.
Let me get BJ Thomas out. I got him somewhere. Hold on.
Anyway, it's pounding. And then it stopped. I mean, just amazing. But it's going to rain again tonight, they think. It's like weird to be raining in northern Silicon Valley here in June.
Hold on. Here it comes. You know, all you have to do is ask, and thou shalt receive.
Raindrops are falling on my head.
Well, it wasn't falling on my head, but anyway. So, lots of news in the last few days.
Yes.
Let's start with, what are we going to start with? I want to start with the airline crash, because you must have some thoughts on that.
Yes, I do. And if you don't mind, I'd like to give you a little personal story from today related to aviation before we go to the Air France Airbus. Airbus, right? Wasn't it Airbus? Yeah. Today, I was flying back from the Netherlands to London. And it was a very nice day, and weather was supposed to be perfect, or as they say, cav okay, which means ceiling and visibility okay. And I was at flight level 50, which is technically 5,000 feet, coming up, coasting in right to the north of beam of Manston. So that's a little bit more northern than Dover. And so I'm coasting in, and I see the weather is just like completely closing in. I mean, it's not just clouds. It's almost like the convection layer just all of a sudden like expanded and really went down to like 1500 feet. So I'm coming from 5000 feet and I'm like, okay, I can't see anything. So I'm going down. I'm descending about 1000 feet a minute. And all of a sudden, and I break through this muck, this murkiness at about 1500 feet. And all of a sudden I hear a rescue helicopter, and the rescue helicopter is talking to Manston and said, well, you know, we're looking for a lost aircraft. Can the November 277 Delta share give us a hand? Because I was pretty much the only guy in the air. So they had me monitoring the emergency frequency and actually doing search and rescue to find some experimental ultralight that they had lost. They couldn't, they had lost radio contact with it, and they had me like checking the ground and making all these different maneuvers. I was like, wow. I didn't find anything, unfortunately, but I just thought that was kind of, it was in a way kind of exciting, and in another way kind of like a bummer. But it was
That's interesting that they when you do that, say, here's a question. Mm-hmm. So you say you're flying around like that, yeah, and the some search and rescue operation comes up on your radio and says, you have to help us, or can you help us, or you somehow help them.
Yeah.
And you go flying around for something and you burn off, like, let's say $500 worth of fuel.
That's a big search and rescue.
Somebody?
It's interesting you say that, because I was talking to Captain Dan, who's the guy who is a certified instructor and who flies with me from time to time in the UK. And he said that he has always been advised by examiners, in fact, when they ask you to participate in search and rescue, to just either not respond or say that you can't. And I said, why? He said, isn't it really clear, but people do say stay away from it. I'm like, well, that makes no sense. You know, someone could be in freaking trouble. Obviously I didn't have to comply, and they asked very nicely, and, you know, it seemed like I was pretty much the only guy up there. So, yeah, of course, I hope someone would be looking for me if I was in trouble. So, no.
Well, did Captain Dan explain his rationale here?
No, it's not his rationale. It's what he's been told, and he said, I wouldn't reject a request like that. So
well, somebody must know why. I mean, did you get sued? Is it like one of those things where you go,
I have a feeling it has something to do with legal implications, but regardless, I I asked him to find out why, and he promised he would. But I didn't have time to doodle around all day, but they gave me a specific area and said, and there's a lot of fields there, a lot of opportunities. There's no airfield except for Manston. So this was really a little bit more towards Canterbury. And they had me on radar, and they were literally giving me vectors, so telling me which direction to turn. And I went down to like 700 feet, 600 feet. I didn't see anything, but it was kind of interesting. So going back to the Airbus, because I did talk to the guys in the tower as I was waiting for a car to come and pick me up, and because I told them the story of the ultralight, the experimental ultralight, and they said, "Wow, little plane gone, big plane gone yesterday." And I said, "What is all this BS about lightning strike? That's so rare that you could actually have a plane crash." And they had done some research, and they had followed the flight path. Now, you have to understand that where this aircraft was, there was no radar contact. But, of course, these planes are jammed with Windows Vista, specifically in the Airbus, but lots of equipment, so they really can't avoid bad weather. But there really was an entire storm system up to 45, maybe even close to 50,000 feet, but certainly up to the 45,000 feet level, that was right in its flight path. And I'll tell you one thing, that you do not want to fly into essentially cumulus nimbus clouds. And at any time,
the Nimbus is a nasty cloud. But I understood that there was a Lufthansa flight within the same range and same flight path that plowed through all this stuff.
Yeah, and it's hard to say because the guy essentially he was climbing, so he might have been climbing through it, and it can be tricky. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard to see. Now, my personal feeling is that it sounds a lot like the continuing war between Airbus and Boeing. It's just like, let's blow one up. It was time. It was time for an Airbus to come down. So it's too bad, but tomorrow I'm flying on a Boeing 747 to San Francisco. So I hope to God that it's not, that my aircraft isn't Boeing.
Are you, what 747 are you taking? There's so few 747 flights nowadays.
No. Virgin Atlantic has Airbus, but for the big crossing, they use 747.
Yeah, no, I think the 747 is the greatest plane in the world.
It is, and sheet metal and rivets, baby. No plastic on that. Sheet metal and rivets. Love it. So there are a couple other theories. I have the article here. And I'm sure you heard about this, that apparently there was a bomb scare the day before. Let me just see if I can.
No, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, I'm looking for it. Hold on. Officials investigate Argentina bomb threat as pilot claims Air France flight 447 was blown out of the sky by terrorists, according to the Mail Online. Investigators are examining a bomb threat called in on a flight from Buenos Aires to Paris just days before flight 447 disappeared over the Atlantic Ocean. Aviation
sounds
authorities.
Sounds like a stretch.
Why?
And usually somebody would take credit for it if they're, doing that.
Well, maybe that's still to come.
I mean, Osama came out with a speech as I was coming back from San Francisco, 15, 20 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Of course, everyone's already poo-pooed it as just
a 9/11, it wasn't like Osama Osama bin Laden took credit for it. No, in fact, the media immediately started saying Osama bin Laden before he had even said anything. So, yeah, it's hard to say, but whether... It's possible, but it is so rare. People always, it's not like Hollywood, where all of a sudden there's a turbulence and lightning flashes and you crash. I mean, it's just not that simple.
Yeah, I've actually been in a plane that's been hit by lightning.
Yeah, of course.
It doesn't do anything, especially if it's in the sky.
I mean, I can be hit by lightning with my plane too, it's not a problem. You hope you're not touching metal at the time and you're not, your foot isn't extended all the way down to the ground, but it just...
Right, so you're dragging some wire.
and even if it hits the electrical systems, there's so many redundancies, so many backups. There's even a little propeller that can, like a little windmill that can drop out of the bottom that'll provide electrical current. Now, there is an instance of, it was a U.S. plane several years ago, that had a maintenance issue. Its elevator, so basically the part that makes the plane go up or down, either got stuck or broken, and they went into a partial nosedive. They were able to recover. And you could have, there's actually audio of this available online. You hear other pilots, you know, looking at him, describing the situation. And, you know, if you lose your elevator, you know, you just go into a nosedive. You go straight down. Or in this case, that's what happened with that aircraft. So that could be a possibility. But really, go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying there's still the issue with the fly-by-wire and the software.
Yeah, and that is indeed what I feel is kind of to Airbus's detriment. Now, this is like a holy war. You know, you talk to Airbus pilots, you talk to Boeing pilots, they will give you different opinions. Personally, I don't like the joystick fly-by-wire. You know, I'd like to feel that I'm actually connected to either directly to the controls, as with my aircraft, small aircraft, or, you know, hydraulics, whatever. I don't like the whole computer fly-by-wire thing. It doesn't sit pretty.
Yeah. You know, I flew a simulator, a real one, that Ames NASA. Mm-hmm. And I flew two different ones. I flew a 747, which is just a full-blown 747 cockpit, the real thing. And also they have this AF, this advanced whatever the heck it is, plane that they program for different things. And it's fly-by-wire, and it's got the little joystick on it.
Yeah,
and curiously, the joystick plane is the only one I could actually land safely.
Hey, John, I think in the real deal, you know what?
I'm just saying that's how the people learn how to fly 747 in a simulator. They don't take them. You know. No.
Well, yeah, sure. But if you're ever on an aircraft and they say, you know, ladies and gentlemen, is there anyone on board who can fly a plane? If John gets up and walks to the cockpit, you're so screwed.
Well, I'll take a few more hours in the simulator before I make.
Dude,
that,
do you have do you have an in on a simulator? Can you get me on the sim? I'd give my left nut to be on a sim like that.
I'll give him a note this week. Maybe we can go together.
Really? Oh God, John. I mean, I would really love you then.
Huh.
I mean, it's hard. It's expensive, man. It's really expensive to get on a sim for an hour.
Yeah, I guess.
But what kind of contact do you have?
That's one of the guys over there. You know, we do it after hours.
Oh, God.
And they actually like to. What's kind of a kick is they like to, you know, it's for the journalists get to go there and we get to fool around in the simulators. Oh, but the funny thing is the one that I thought was the most interesting experience was 747 takeoff, which they're easy to take off.
Yeah.
But 747 takeoff on an iced over runway with a strong, completely ice, snowing, mm-hmm. and a crosswind.
How much crosswind?
It was a lot. Anyway, it goes.
Hello,
like this.
John C. Dvorak. You've got a crosswind on runway 30. It's a lot.
It goes like this. It goes like this.
It's a lot.
What difference does it make? You can't go anywhere.
No, of course it makes a difference. You have to know what the crosswind component is. You know, because
there's so much ice on the runway that all I did was just touch the throttle and I went straight into the terminal.
And your bags can be picked up at terminal 1, 3, and 7.
And apparently, I was spinning the whole time. So,
well, you could see with multi-engine.
I didn't care about what the crosswinds were. What difference does it make?
With multi-engine, you can do it, but you need to compensate with your engine, so you give more thrust on the opposite engine.
The way to do it. I talked to a pilot once because I sat next to one about this situation. But the guys at Ames NASA, they just think it's hilarious.
Yeah, so, well, put me on that icy runway in that sim, man. I'll get us off the ground, John. I promise you.
Sure.
I promise you.
So the big news here over in the States, which you'll be picking up on when you get here, is real news.
Oh, hold on. I was just switching to my browser. Give me a second.
Okay, well, I can skip the real news now.
And now, back to real news.
Yes?
And the real news is that Conan O'Brien bumped, you know, got Jay Leno off the air, and now he's doing a show which is highly... Right now, it's extremely overproduced, and it's actually quite good. He's a very pleasant person.
So, yeah, this is the big move where Jay Leno has moved to 10 o'clock, and this is the new primetime deal. Is that on now as well, or is it...
No, that doesn't start until the fall season, and it has disaster written all over it for everybody but Jay Leno, who will walk away probably... probably close to being a billionaire.
Yeah.
Because he's essentially picking up five primetime slots a week, and typically those bring in a budget of about $10 to $15 million a show, and it's going to be a low budget show. Let's face it.
You don't know that.
No, I don't know that, but compared to a cop drama, I don't see that he's going to be putting in as much money into the show.
Well,
yeah. I mean, it's a studio show. Give me a break.
How expensive can it be? I mean, the anticipation is high. I have heard that there is going to be a lot more production. I think we're probably going to see a lot more skits, which honestly, Leno's skits are usually pretty lame. You know, it's not like a Letterman skit, which is meant to be lame and ergo very funny.
It's not going to have more production value than, let's say, a Saturday Night Live or Mad TV, and those still don't cost as much money to produce as a cop drama.
So you're calling it now? You're calling it failure?
Yeah.
Wow. But
I'm calling it before it even shows up. I'm going to give him...
How many weeks do you give him?
I'm going to give him 6 to 12 weeks, and he's off the air.
Okay. It'll either
be
6.
In that period of time, he'll make probably about $5 or $6 million a day.
I wonder what their contingency plan is, because you know there's nothing in production. If it doesn't work out, I mean, they've got to give him a lot more time. There's just no way. There's no contingency.
That's good. And in terms of the bet, I think your logic is sound. Because you're right, they have to have a contingency plan. You can't take off five hours of prime time at 10 o'clock, which is a key.
But wait a minute, it's not 5 hours, is it? How much time is he actually getting? I thought it was
he's getting an hour, 10 to 11.
Five times a week. Okay, gotcha. No, that essentially would be one primetime drama or two like sitcoms. So that's expensive stuff, man. That's really, really expensive. And of course, he's going to be pocketing all the money. Let's put it this way. The money won't necessarily be on the screen.
Yeah, it'll be in his pocket.
Yeah. So,
this guy, I don't know how he arranged this. I finally come to the conclusion that this guy's a master salesman. First, even though he blamed his agent, he managed to get Johnny Carson kicked off of television. And Carson, once he retired, never even did a Vegas act or showed up for an interview, never did anything after that. He was so steamed up about it. So he gets him bumped off, and then he comes up and sells this idea. I mean, this is a master at sales, this guy.
I disagree. I don't think it's a master sales job. I think it's complete desperation that, you know, the numbers are totally in the toilet. They've got to do something. They've got to save money at the same time. This is a total Hail Mary, and they're doing the right thing by saying this is, you know, groundbreaking, etc. But it's a Hail Mary, John. It's not a sales job.
I don't think the idea came from a network executive.
Anyway, let's move on, because a lot of our audience does not give a crap about American primetime television. What they might give a crap about is real news from Latvia. Yes, Latvians may be feeling depressed, according to Der Spiegel, fine German publication. They may be feeling depressed as a result of the economic crisis, which has hammered the Baltic state, but... On Sunday, over 500 blonde women did their best to lift the spirits in Riga with a blonde weekend event. Where essentially 500 blondes paraded through the capital wearing pink and white, many escorted by lapdogs wearing the same cheerful colors. Their goal? To use their beauty to shine a little light into the dark mood caused by the global downturn. Let me tell you, we need more of this. This is an excellent, excellent idea.
Brother, you know, this would have about as much chance as a snowball in hell of getting even past, you know, they don't mind having a gay parade where everybody's kind of dressed like that in San Francisco, but to have a bunch of women.
Oh, no, can't have that. Yeah, check out the pictures, man.
Women
check
dolled out the pictures. Up with their little dogs is not going to happen.
Dude, I'm saying, look at these pictures. I just Skyped you the link. I'm saying roadshow to Latvia.
You're going to put this in the show notes?
Yeah, of course. Excellent.
Hey, Latvian women aren't that bad looking.
Yeah, look at the middle one, in the middle picture. Look at her, man. The whole gallery, they're hot, dude. Look at them. Go blonde.
There's a couple of muffin tops there, but, you know, other than that.
Oh, John, you're not a muffin top in your black Speedo Hema underwear.
I don't wear tight clothes.
Yes, you do.
No.
Your HEMA Speedos. And I've put them on order.
They're not that tight.
Hey, I've put them on order. I have a demo coming, a beta with no agenda on the crotch. HEMA underwear. I've ordered 100 pair. Seriously. Well, seriously.
You're going to get different sizes, I hope?
No, one size fits all. It's one size fits all at no agenda, my friend.
By the way, talking about one size fits all, I wanted to mention something. You know, when I was shopping at the HEMA, I noticed something that I think Americans probably haven't seen this forever, which is that you go to buy some socks, and they actually have your size.
Yeah.
As opposed to one size fits all. Everyone, because we have the low SKUs. We can't have too many SKUs. So just make a sock that fits everybody.
Yeah, no. I mean, so many people have emailed me about the HEMA underwear, and they totally agree. Even women who say they love to wear men's HEMA underwear.
They used to say the same. To tell you the truth, my wife was included in this. They used to like to wear the old Marks and Sparks underwear until the company stopped making quality.
Yep. Well, all you need to do is, are we doing a $50 limit or $100 limit for the no agenda crotch ridden HEMA underwear?
Oh, that has to be that. That'll have to go on the. Well, we'll do both. 50. Just get twice as many.
No, I only have 100, man. It's the first run. But we're going to look at the we're going to look at the demo first to see if we actually like the embroidery.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. The first.
That's 10 times as expensive as the actual underwear itself, as the embroidery part.
Well, I don't understand why that is, because there's so many of these computerized embroidering machines and operations now. You should be able to get that embroidered for a buck.
No, but you're misunderstanding. These are hand embroidered.
Oh, please.
This is quality stuff. It's quality stuff, John.
You don't want a hand embroidered. What difference does it make?
Well, because it's a hand job.
Is that the reason that you even brought this up? So it lead to that joke?
There you go. Bada bing. You want to do your greyhound dog joke?
You were talking about earlier, you mentioned that some people used to say you could bet on horses by
going to the
take a dump. Yeah. I heard this seriously, that somebody said, you go to a dog track, and by the way, there's a lot of cool dog tracks in Florida. Mm-hmm. You go to a dog track, and you would always watch the dogs before you placed your bet. You'd look for the last dog to take a dump, and you'd bet on that dog. Mm-hmm. Now, I was at the track, I swear, and it was like, here's how it lined up for me. It was June 6th, 6-6. It was the sixth race. It was dog number six, and he took a dump. I put $6 on him, and he came in sixth.
Good job. Hey, can't wait to go to the track with you. Sounds like a hoot.
Actually, the dog track is one of the funniest things I've ever experienced, because about half the races, as the dogs go, they go like a bat out of hell. They fly around the track, and on the first curve, there's always some dog on the inside that trips and falls. All the dogs go over. It's hilarious.
I used to watch the steeplechase. What is the big steeplechase in the UK? I found it's like sad, man, where horses are falling over and they fall on the jockeys and the horses break their legs and
a steeplechase. Are they chasing a steeple? I don't get it.
No, a steeple has something to do with the, cause these really, really high hedges that the horses have to. So it's basically a track, but the huge,
they
it's like
a jump.
Yeah, they got to jump. It's like, what do you call it in track and field?
Hurdles.
Hurdles, yeah. But they're really, really high. And it's,
once in a while a horse falls over and, hurts himself.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about horse, not dog. Gordon Ramsay, I think we actually predicted this. Didn't we predict that his demise was coming?
Well, he's getting out of it. It looks like he's going to save himself. I mean, he has to shut down a bunch of operations.
Well, I mean, no.
I do have to make a, when we bring this, while we, as we do the story, I do have a point of clarification that somebody, sent me a note on. Mm-hmm. But go ahead.
Oh, well, from the Sunday Times, he's pretty much out of business altogether. £7 million in back taxes for this money losing operations, and that has to be like VAT or something like that, because if you lose money, you shouldn't technically have to owe any taxes. But this story, which I will put the link in the show notes, man, the guy is just, he is admitting, he's saying that you know, he says, my ego got the better of me, particularly with his U.S. operations. I think that's what we were talking about, the U.S. operations, that it's so hard to, you know, to run one restaurant as a celebrity chef, let alone, you know, 10 or 15, and particularly having them in New York, which is, forget about it. So his goose is cooked, I guess.
Well, I read another article. It looks like at least he's gonna survive it. He's gonna pay the taxes, and it's gonna be a smaller operation. Now, a couple of things that came up in the conversation recently when we were talking about sous vide.
Explain sous vide again, because people
sous vide
forget.
Is that low temperature cooking in a vacuum packed bag where you take a piece of meat or fish and you put it in this. It's like one of those cooking bags, but you suck all the air out of it and then you drop it in a bath of warm water and cook it for a day and a half, and it makes a weird tasting thing, and I think it's a dangerous way to cook, to summarize. Anyway, I mentioned that I thought that when Ramsay was being criticized for using cooking bags, that it was all sous vide, but somebody hooked me up to an article. If I can find it, we'll put it in the show notes. I don't know. It was a week ago or more. Apparently Ramsay had a bunch of little restaurants here and there in some part of England, and so he had a central kitchen that he was making literally cooking bags of, you know, like coq au vin or something like that. And it wasn't sous vide at all.
Coq au vin.
Whatever. It was not sous vide. It was actual, you know, just let's make the stuff someplace else, put it in a bag and seal it and send it to the restaurant and let them warm it up.
Right, right.
And there was some documentation for that. And I suppose it was probably better than most food in most restaurants. But the same thing is that after watching him do all those shows, and we've both watched his show a lot.
Yes.
It's, and all the lecturing he does about, you know, well, you can cook it fresh, do it on the spot. I don't like stuff frozen.
He was full of crap.
Yeah, then he's doing it. So, I mean, it's just like, you know, it's a little annoying.
Well, anyway. I like the guy. I hope his TV show continues. I've eaten at one or two of his restaurants. It's good. But the TV show is more interesting to me than the
restaurants. Yeah, I thought it was entertaining. And I like his consulting style.
Style, yeah.
You know, it's very down to earth and straightforward, and it's something people can adopt to all kinds of things. I think he's got a good, but you know, this setback is probably going to affect his, a lot of his personality.
Yeah. Hey, the big news over in Gitmo Nation East in Europe tomorrow, the European elections are being held.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I wanted to talk about this on the show a few months back when I was coming back from Amsterdam. I was on a Lufthansa flight, and they were playing a commercial on the airplane. You know, they have these, you can watch.
Yeah, it's
TV.
Called in-flight entertainment.
That's it. And it was a long commercial about extolling the virtues of everybody getting to vote, and they had they were interviewing one person after another. Oh, I'm so happy I can vote. And they go from one country to another.
I'm on E. I'm so happy I can vote.
It was unbelievable. And then it was like a whole thing was like a promotion to make sure everybody voted. And then now, as I read these reports from Europe, it's like half the people aren't even remotely interested in voting. And some of them just say, I'm not going to vote.
You watch the turnout. You watch how low the turnout is going to be. But there's a lot of fishy stuff going on. And I wanted to highlight one thing in particular. Tomorrow, and now the European Parliament is huge. 754 ministers of European Parliament will be chosen. Now, this is a significant number.
Yeah, this is like that thing in Star Wars.
It's the Starfleet Command Council or whatever. But what's significant about it is that this year we had 736 seats, and now with tomorrow's vote, there'll be 754. Why is that interesting? That's an extra 18 seats. And that was determined in the Lisbon Treaty, that an extra 18 seats were to be created. Of course, the Lisbon Treaty has not actually been ratified and passed by all the countries. So they're ramming this shit through without it even being ratified.
What are these extra seats for?
To suck more money out of the citizens of Europe. I'm sure it has to do, you know, there's all these different rules about when a majority wins. It's math, and I really haven't done it yet, but essentially, if you have one of the majors like France or Germany, and then you need two more of the minor countries, and even though you don't have a majority, you win a vote anyway. So it's a scam, John. It's a scam. They needed the 18 seats to be able. Somehow it's changing the balance of the voting structure. That's the only, you know, the only thing I can come up with.
So what do you think the turnout's going to be? 30-40% max?
I would say 28.
No.
Yeah, I'll say 28%.
Nah.
Yeah, I'll say 28%. Because I think it's very, very low. There's a lot of, you know, the real news is popping up all over Europe. You know, there's all kinds of distractions. I think it'll be very, very low. There's an article in the Irish Daily Mail, which I don't want to go into it into great detail, but it does talk about one particular minister of European Parliament. You'll probably remember this guy from the German Green Party, Daniel Cohn-Bendit, who I guess is up for re-election. He is actually a self-confessed pedophile. This is the guy who was teaching kindergarten and had kids, pull a zipper up and down as some kind of like kind of
hey,
like
kids,
game.
Come here.
Some kind of, no, I tell you, hold on a second. He produced a book in 1975. He worked in a kindergarten and allowed the children to pull down the zip on his trousers and touch him intimately. In the book, he had asked them why they wanted to play with him and not with each other, but in the end, he caressed them. His words. Oh, God.
Oh, God. It's like that creepy character in Family Guy.
Which one is that?
There's an old man in Family Guy who's a pedophile, and he comes, he's not in all the shows, but he comes in every so often, and he talks like this, and he's just a creepy guy, no teeth, and he's like 80, and he's always asking the kids to get something out of his pockets.
I got a dime in here.
And he's got a walker. He goes around the walker, so I can't reach in my pocket. Can you reach in and get my wallet? God,
that's horrible.
It's really pretty funny.
Germany's constitutional court is to publish its judgment on whether the Lisbon Treaty is compatible with the country's constitution by June 30th. This will be very important as they're examining a complaint by center-right politician Peter Gauweiler and some left-wing deputies that...
Now, sorry, what country is this?
This is Germany.
Oh, Germany? So in other words, the Lisbon Treaty may be incompatible with the German constitution?
Yeah.
Makes sense. Probably is.
Well, it is because I've read this thing, and essentially the death penalty, or if you resist arrest and you run away, if you are killed by the authorities, it's a legal kill. It is. I read this thing,
buddy.
Man.
Hey, see that dog over there? Go chase him. Hurry.
You may have forgotten.
Illegal kill.
Yeah, but you may have forgotten. Well, we did discuss this, I think, previously on the show when this whole thing, really started cranking up, but in the constitution, the human rights amendment, if you will, there's stuff in there that says, you know, if you are a vagrant, a drug abuser, which includes alcohol, if you are not of sound mind, you can be arrested. You know, this is the total Gitmo state is just about complete. And now that they have their 18, I'll tell you, maybe it's this. Maybe they got these 18 extra votes and somehow they'll finagle it so that they can, you know, ratify the thing without even having, they're just going to bypass Ireland. You know, it's like, screw it, Ireland. You don't even have to vote again, even though you said no already. We've already got the votes. It's going to be something like that. It's going to get ramrodded through and people are so lethargic to this, which is why I predict a 28%. I'm going to write this down. 28% voter turnout. What did you say?
I was thinking 30 to 40, maybe up to 40%.
Call a number.
Well, I mean, I could play Price is Right and just predict 29, but I'm going to predict, I'll try to be a little more honest about it. I'm going to predict they're going to do about 39%.
39.
10 points higher than yours.
Okay, 39%. You watch. JCD, 39. Okay, it's documented now. Documented, baby. All right, what you got? I got tons of stuff. So,
well, go on with another item. I've got a bunch of things kind of here, but they're, you know, they're. Well, let me look at a couple.
I got
things.
One.
The Guantanamo Bay game came out, or are they working on it?
I've seen screenshots of this thing.
I don't know if it's a joke or not. I can't.
No, it's not a joke. No, I think it's real. I've seen screenshots and YouTube videos.
We got a number of people that sent us links to the BBC articles on no jabs, no school, says Labor.
This is about the MMR, the mumps, rubella.
Measles.
Mumps, measles, rubella. Yeah, and this, of course, is already in place, I think, in New Jersey and several other states in the U.S. If your kid does not have all vaccinations, then they're actually forbidden from attending school, which I think is unconstitutional by itself.
I think it's totally unconstitutional.
Yeah. So now this is all over the news here in the U.K., and of course, everyone says, "Yeah, it's a good idea." At least everyone they interview on the BBC thinks it's a good idea. Everyone they interviewed and they showed on the BBC, which ergo, of course, means everyone wants it.
I've had the measles when I was a kid. Everybody got the measles and the mumps, and sometimes they got the German measles, which is what rubella is. It's another form of measles. Only the German measles only lasts like 3 days, but that's the dangerous one because if a pregnant woman
can make
gets
you sterile,
the sterile one I think is the mumps. If you're an adult male gets the mumps, you get it down, and you get the ball mumps is what you get. And rubella, if you're a female pregnant woman and you get this, which is that doesn't happen that often, but I suppose it happens once in a while, your child is essentially ruined. Yeah. For some reason. But generally, when we were kids, everyone would get the measles and the mumps and the chicken pox and all this stuff. And it wasn't – I never thought – you know, nobody was that worked up about it. It wasn't like people were dropping dead. You'd get the measles. He's got the measles.
In fact, I had
the German measles, and I had to stay – I think you had to stay out of the light. Yeah. And you got to be inside for a couple of days, and then it goes away. It's a very short-lived thing. My son – who's graduating shortly, he had the measles or the chicken pox. I can't remember what I know. It was the chicken pox, and it was the weirdest thing. He had like one pock.
You need a shot,
like annoyed
kid.
Everybody in the family.
One pock.
He was diagnosed. He had the chicken pox. He had the one pock.
Where was the one pock?
It's on his face. It was a pock.
You sure it wasn't a pimple?
No, it wasn't a pimple. It was a chicken pox.
So it's one pock Dvorak. Love it. Wait, let me ask you.
So it's like, wow, everyone's going. We were so jealous. How did you get away with only getting one pock? You may have had two, but it was beside the point.
You know, there are actual parties, measles parties for parents.
Yeah, no, that's kind of sick.
I don't think it's sick. I think it's a perfectly good idea. You know, there's measles breakout, and you basically put the kids together so they all get infected, and they get the measles, and then, of course, their immune system is much stronger for it, and they all survive. You know, everyone lives happily ever after.
Yeah, well, just something sick about it.
Hey, I just saw breaking news that someone sent to me. Apparently, well, maybe it's not breaking news. It's a Dutch article. Brilli. .nl sent it to me that apparently Google and Yahoo conspired, which would be a cartel, not cartel forming, but anti-competitive. They made secret agreements not to poach each other's staff.
This is from really?
Yeah, wait a minute. Washington Post article. Hold on. Let me take this. Just came
out. That's a scandal.
Yeah, it's a huge scandal. Hold on. I'll send you the link. For some reason,
we got to find more of this stuff because this is how we get some of this money into the coffers of the U.S. government. You know, that's a big fine in that one. That's like a multi.
Oh, and the European Union, of course, can lay fine on top of it. Yeah, here comes Naily. Here comes Naily. Let me give you this link. It's something's weird with the. It's like some proxy thing. Like the internet is really fast, but it takes 25 to 30 seconds for the page to actually start loading. It's dumb. Okay, here, check this out. You'll probably get the page to load
before I do.
That
might be a good call for my market watch.
Oh, well, there you go.
Maybe. I mean, it doesn't sound like more than an item, to be honest.
Federal antitrust probe targets tech giants, sources say. It's not loading for me, John. Get to the check the story out. And see
I'm looking at it. The review said it's a preliminary stage is focused on the search engine giant Google and its competitor Yahoo, Apple maker of the popular iPhone, and the biotech firm Genentech, among others. They're going after everybody.
Wow, Genentech too, huh?
This is Obama. The Obama boys are going for it.
Obama figure,
this is the, we can get some money. I mean, it's, it, you know, the government has been so lax with these big companies that have been really kind of taking advantage of the situation for so long. Mm-hmm. Now you just turn it around just a little bit and start turning up the heat, and you've got lots of money coming in.
Coming in. That's one way to do it.
Yeah, it works for me. I've always thought this collusive stuff was a bad idea. I don't like it. I don't like the fact that companies don't compete. I never liked the fact that during the both the Bush 1, Reagan, Clinton, and Bush 2, the whole group of them let these one tech company buy its competitor one after another after another. I mean, Symantec basically was one of five or six or seven tools makers that made utilities programs. Right. And they just essentially bought the rest of – they bought one, two, three. They just bought them all. And they took over the whole business. It just didn't do the public any good. I mean, it did them a lot of good because they didn't have to worry about competing anymore. But I always thought, how come nobody's stopping this?
Could you imagine if Mevio and Revision 3 had such a shady deal amongst under the table deal?
You'd be on page 175 of the memo.
Yeah, 175 of the Onion.
Yeah, we'll get to those guys eventually. How much do you think we can get out of them?
Let's take Curry's plane from Bloomberg. I'm sure you've heard this one because you're so all over the tech news. Steve Ballmer, CEO of Microsoft, said if Congress enacts President Barack Obama's plans to impose higher taxes on U.S. companies, it will have to move work offshore.
Like they haven't already. Let's see. Wait, let me get this straight. Microsoft's already hired more H-1B people and want to hire even more, and then they laid off the non-H-1Bs. And they got placed – they got – R&D in China. They got R&D in India. They opened up a big giant thing. And so they're going to – they already did.
Well,
and by the way, you're still taxed.
Can we do a little intermezzo?
You know, if you're an American company, you're getting taxed for whatever your profits are. What has it got to do with being offshore? He can be all offshore, and they're still going to get taxed.
You know, particularly with a virtual company, you would think it's pretty easy.
Yes, and what he has to do, which
hold on. So the tax difference would be employment tax. That which is huge.
Okay, well that's true.
How about a little intermezzo, John? I need a little shit. It's crap.
What'd you do?
It's not loading. I wanted it on cue, but it's not working. Yeah. Crap. Never mind. It might
start
in a
second. You gotta get something faster. Get a PC. Get rid of that Mac.
No, it's the page. It has nothing to do with the Mac. Please. I'm not getting rid of this Mac. In fact, I'm afraid to buy a new one because the sticker on the back probably won't transfer. Oh, there it is. Everybody, please sing along.
What is this you're playing?
Monty Python.
I don't remember this song.
No. Truly, life would be fine if we both 69. If we sit on our faces and all sorts of places and play till we're blown away. All right. Sorry, I just found that the other day, and I love the song
it's
so much.
It's kind of gross. Yeah, I like it, though. So I never heard that before. I didn't know if Monty Python did the
blue classic, material. Classic.
Huh. So, anyway, we're talking about taxes.
I was trying to break away, but yeah, you got something?
No.
California, apparently, according to Pacific Business News, will run out of cash in 14 days.
You know, I've lived in California, like, I'd say 99% of my life. Mm-hmm. This happens every single year they run out of cash in 14 days. Every year this goes on. Every year. It's never ended. So what?
I'm just saying. It'll happen while I'm out there.
Yeah, well, and you know what the difference will be? You probably the services will improve. I don't know.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked today in Amsterdam. A friend of mine, her mom is in... dying. She's in care, and so part of it is paid for by the state, And so she was at her inner, you know, she basically had to have like every 3 months they sit down with you know, the chief of the care center, and you could say, hey, so how's everything going? Any complaints? And she had noticed that, you know, the room really wasn't getting cleaned very well. It was really dusty. I mean, like big gobs of dust. And the, and this lady says, well, you know, I'm really sorry about that, but we've had all these cutbacks, and one of the big cutbacks on the government budget for these homes is on the cleaning personnel. So now it's like 100 rooms or whatever. So now there's only one.
That's the last thing you're supposed to cut.
Of course. And it's like one day a week, and they have to do over 100 rooms, and now it's the vacation period, and they don't have, it's not like they have any temporary help. It's just half the staff is gone. It's unconscionable. And this is the government.
This is always the way bureaucrats operate. When they get to make them cut something, they always cut some of the most important essential things just to screw with everyone. You know, I'm reminded of when I was at Tech TV, when they were starting to do cutbacks over there. You have to remember, there was a bunch of shows that had a bunch of very attractive women that were only, not to insult any of them, there's a couple of them that were naturally beautiful, but generally speaking, most women on television, if you sit them down in a chair for a couple hours with a makeup person, they're fantastic looking.
Sure, sure.
So they got rid of the makeup people. The cheapest people in the place.
That's right. You're right. That's always the first to go. You're right. We got to cut back on hair and makeup. And by the way, the lighting director can come in once a week too.
That's unbelievable. And the worst part about it is I know that these people were the lowest paid. Meanwhile, the executives are out living it up.
It's like at MTV, they always did that. And literally, it's like, well, you know, we have a little bit of a slow period and a cutback, so the lighting director is only going to, instead of being there all full time, it'll come in 2 days a week, and you get a mark as your spot, and then it was like, find your light. So you have to like, hold on, let me just angle my head a little bit to the right. Hey, everybody, it's Bon Jovi.
God.
Yeah.
Creeps.
Whereas at Mevio, we just don't do makeup at all.
No, actually, they have a makeup person for a couple of the people they bring in.
I know we do. Does she do your makeup? You have makeup on, don't you?
No, I do not use makeup.
You should.
I know.
I'm sorry, that came
Tell
out.
Me
that
about
came.
It. I look great with makeup on.
Well, why don't you get the makeup person to come by?
You know, who cares? Who's watching?
You know what?
Me
why
anyway?
Don't you do? I do my own makeup. Why don't you do your own makeup?
Yeah, you do that anyway, whether you're on the air or not.
Yeah, so I get laid.
So here's the deal. Somebody sent me a note because I mentioned propylene glycol because it was related to ethylene glycol. It might be poisonous, but no, of course, it's not. Apparently,
this is what we were talking about this regarding, was it cigarettes?
Yeah, or those phony cigarettes.
Yeah.
The ones that have
the e-cigarette, yes.
The e-cigarette, the e-cig. So was cig, by the way, a special interest group. So e-cig is actually kind of interesting as a term. So but just as a nerd.
No,
thing.
But it's C-I-G, not S-I-G.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Yeah. It's a pun. So anyway, the point is that the guy mentions this propylene glycol thing, and then it's the way it is with chemistry. I mean, you have, for example, ethyl alcohol is something you can digest, and methyl alcohol will kill you. I mean, you just change the thing around a little bit, and one's poisonous and one's not. But what it brings to mind is a couple of things, and I want to just kind of change gears for just 1 second, which is that we do need more support. We had a really lousy week last week, and for various reasons, we didn't get as much. Volunteer income.
Like zero.
Donations. Well, we got a couple. But it was we didn't get the donations we normally get.
And look at what we're doing. Look what we're doing for this show. I mean, right now it is 10:45. I'm dead tired. There's all kinds of shit going on in my life. You've rushed back from the city doing other stuff, Mevio related. You know, what did you do, Cranky Geeks today?
Yeah, Cranky Geeks. Good show today, by the way.
Who was on?
I don't remember. So... How am I supposed to remember?
Who cares? But, you know, we really do put the effort into it twice a week. On Sunday. Sunday, it's like a day off. It's the Lord's day. The Lord's day. You know, and we're working, you know. We need some dough.
Dvorak.org/NA.
Dvorak.org/NA. Once again.
Now, wait, I want to do the jingle.
No, the jingle is. I think the jingle is what killed it, to be honest with you. I think that jingle's too long.
I love it.
It's too flippant.
It's 22 seconds.
That's way too long for a jingle for this show.
Well, how about this one then?
Okay, that's good. Things
and
have to
that's
be
another
shorter.
One for the armory.
All right. Yeah, well, Jeff is going to be hurt now that you don't like his jingle.
Jeff has to shorten these things up because I got too many complaints about the length of the thing. And then I listen to it and say, well, it's a little flippant. You know, it's as though, you know, yeah, you know, we're going to throw something. It was not serious enough. Like, okay. We really do need the money.
Yes, we do.
But let's go. Let's back up. I want to just ask one more thing for people out there because of this propylene glycol thing. If you want to get a hold of me, you can send me an email to john@dvorak.org. And if you're interested in this particular thing, instead of donating money, I want a copy of the Merck Index by my side. And if
what?
I have a copy, the Merck Index.
I don't understand.
The Merck Index is the – I used to have one. I used to use it when I was a chemist. I used to be a chemist, and that's how I learned about the
Merck
Index.
What is the Merck Index?
The Merck Index is this big book, and you can look up anything in there that's a chemical or anything.
Oh.
And all chemists use this book constantly because you're always saying, I'm going to be putting this, you know, this reagent together. And you look up the stuff to see if it's going to kill you.
Does it have a little mark next to it? Like, this
is
deadly.
I'm telling you, there is some stuff that you work with, and you use it. And in analysis, in terms of doing some chemical analysis, you have to work with some of this stuff. And I'm not going to start throwing out names of various weird poisons, but there was one in particular that will – I mean, one – flake of this stuff, if it lands on your skin, will kill you dead in seconds.
What is it? Let's get some of that.
I'm not going to tell what it is. It's
in why fact, not? Is it readily available? Is it easy to obtain?
I have no idea. All I know is that was in a safe, and you had to have two or three people to get it out. It's horrible stuff.
Cool.
But the Merck Index is what you use to quickly look up the stuff. If I had the Merck Index next to me when I
is it expensive?
Blather on about propylene glycol, I would have looked it up, and I would say, you know,
is the Merck Index expensive? Is this a costly
book? $100
Well, there you go. You could be the person who actually pays for the Merck Index. $100
Yeah.
That would be great.
You get an old one for a lot less, but a new one's about $100.
So that stuff that you mentioned, that flake, is that and the way they handle that, you have to have three people in a safe? That sounds like a Baxter International operation, actually.
It's kind of like that, but you know, there's a lot of stuff that you don't know is you know, you never heard of, or you don't. But the Merck Index has got everything in there, and you'd look that one up, and it would just say, "Wow."
How do you spell it? How do you spell Merck in
Merck? M-E-R-C-K. It's
oh, from Merck. Okay,
yeah, I think it's done by those guys.
Wait, isn't that online?
Not the real one. Maybe you can subscribe to some online service, but there's no way I can look this. And besides that, it's nice to have a big tome next to you when I can flip through it.
You just hold on. Merck Index, Wikipedia. Oh, the Merck Index online. There you go.
I want the book.
Hold on. Merck. It says Merck Index on. Oh, I hate this proxy thing. I'm never staying at this hotel again. Oh, here it is, dude. You'll get the book. Don't worry. You'll get the book. Check it out.
The point, anyway, by the way, I'm wondering why your Skype, connection is outstanding.
Fantastic. I know it's something that it has
to what's wrong with the web?
Because it's some kind of proxy or something, you know?
Index online.
SM. There you go. So can you search?
I don't know.
You can download the PDF, John. Oh, it's the blue
PDF. This thing is huge. I don't want to download the PDF.
Oh, God forbid. But you can't search. Can you search?
I'm not seeing any search. This is an October 2005. There's a 2006 version.
Oh, it's outdated. It's no good.
Well, you know, the fact is the one from 1960 is probably as good as anything.
All right. World Health Organization official says, world edging towards pandemic. Geneva. Dateline, Geneva. The spread of H1N1 flu in Australia, Britain, Chile, Japan, and Spain has nudged the world.
These guys give up on this. We had 30,000, just a regular flu with everybody all inoculated. We had 30,000 deaths in the United States. We had what, five? What are these guys, what are they trying to sell here?
Well, vaccines. The newly discovered strain had caused more infections than seasonal influenza at the start of Chile's flu season, raising concern about how it would spread in the southern hemisphere, according to Keiji Fukuda, who, of course, is the World Health Organization's acting assistant director general. They do not give up, do they?
I want to mention, by the way, that of all the people covering this from the get-go, we are the only ones. That called it as bullshit from the very beginning. Well, actually, it was you.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Slow on the draw.
I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that I was reading an article the other day that's now saying that they expect the United States citizens to have to get 3 flu shots a year.
Yeah, well, in the Netherlands, they've already ordered.
Why?
Well, because it's they're like $5 a pop. In the Netherlands, they ordered 17 million people in the country. Everyone gets 2 shots, $5 a pop. It'll be mandatory. Otherwise, you can't go to school or you can't go to McDonald's or whatever they'll make up. It's money, 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 baby. It's all about money. You know what? We should have that. We're begging for money. We're stupid. We need to have people take a flu shot and charge them
by law.
Exactly.
Sorry. Dvorak.org/NA to wrap that up. Anyway, go to Dvorak.org/NA. I'm going to change that page so it's a little more pleasant, by the way. And I'm going to put something in there so people can subscribe in a way that they can get a knighthood. Now, there's another one that you should be, since you're in England, I understand that Wacky Jackie, the crazy woman that runs there, is quitting.
No, it's Sheila Bair.
No, I thought Wacky Jackie was quitting. That's what I was reading in the Times.
I thought it. Well, I know that Sheila Bair quit, and she's on Wacky Jackie level. Hold on, let me try. Wacky.
This is the one who put Michael Savage on the
do not enter list. Yeah, let me see the news. Hold on a second. For some reason, Google just popped really quick on this shitty connection. While I'm looking that up, John, I got some inside information which I think is pretty interesting. There is a new $20 billion project that has just been approved for natural gas in Australia.
Hmm.
And it's already been sold. It's already been pre-sold to the usual suspects in the Pacific Rim. But what's interesting, there's this island, and the name escapes me. There's an island that's actually a nature reserve. Or it's a protected island, and there's been a kind of like an independent oil or a independent refinery, a natural gas refinery on that island for like 40 years. And the only reason they were allowed to have that refinery there is because they had to, commit to protecting the island. And so now they're going to start doing this $20 billion project, and they're expanding. They had a little runway there that could take like King Airs and stuff, but now they're expanding it to take Dash 80s. So it'll be huge, and it's, screw the environment, screw the island. Let's just go ahead.
There's a bunch of weird stuff going on in the petrol business.
Yeah. Well, the prices are moving up. We're moving towards.
The prices are moving up for no apparent reason, while the demand is down. So I think this is kind of a phony thing, and I'm expecting that to turn around eventually. But I was watching Dan Rather show on HDNet. It's really interesting because he got a bunch of Russians on there, and they're talking about the strategy with Russia. And I'm going to send you an MP3 of the chat so you can listen to it because we need to talk about what they discussed.
Yep.
And they also talk about how Russia's got this huge natural gas pond that's apparently the size of, anything Saudi Arabia or anybody else has. And then we have this discovery in Australia. And then, every once in a while I get an email on this, we have in the United States discovered two huge pools.
Huge.
And the one in Louisiana apparently is as big as anything in the world, and nobody's talking about it.
It's Hazel Blear. I'm sorry. Hazel Blear has resigned. I don't know what you're talking about, Wacky Jackie. I only see Hazel Blear.
I'll have to get you the link. Yeah. But
can you send me that MP3 tonight so I can listen to it on the plane?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, because I got 10 hours.
Well,
man.
What time? Okay, well, I have to go pull it. In other words, to make the MP3.
I'm not pulling anything. Not by your command.
So I'm going to have to pull the thing, and then it'll take an hour. So if you can pick it up in a couple hours, I can do it.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I'd leave the hotel at 9, so that's only 1 a.m. your time, so you have plenty of time to look for it.
To pull it.
Yeah. Hey, the that magazine that I offered, since they, illegally took my copyrighted, Creative Commons copyrighted picture.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, why don't you just send 5,000 euros to War Child? So they had the editor of this magazine on television going, ha, 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 we're not going to do that. First of all, what a dick. War Child. Ha, 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 we're not going to send any money to War Child. And by the way, I haven't received any real documentation. Well, they'll be in court within 2 weeks. I don't even have to show up. My lawyer is so confident. He says, Adam, even if we lose, I'll pay for our costs. It's like these guys are so screwed. I love it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So, what else we got on the list? So I had one thing. There's a
we got to wrap it up, man. We got
the war with Korea. We can do that on the next show.
The war with Korea.
I
want to
thank producers Keith Ray, Chris Engler, our East Coast research Lutz, and Frederick Carlson for sending us a lot of tips. There was something on Twitter that's kind of interesting. I was trying to remember, but I can't remember. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had this question before we started the show because I was looking at Twitter for people who were saying that they can hear the stream. I wonder why people, you know, they say, I am leaving my house to go to such and such to, I'm going to be flying to New York, and they tell you all these details of their lives. I wonder how many, when some criminals are going to decide to get on Twitter and just rob people blind because they're telling every move that they make is on a personal level.
Say that again.
In other words, I'm here in Albany by myself because my wife is over at the other house, and I think I'm going to go to New York today. I'll be back in a week. Now, what do I want to make that announcement for? Just leave my house like open?
Yeah, really. Come on by.
And does anybody think does anyone think it's a good idea to be so open with your every move?
No. That I don't think it's a good idea.
I was seeing somebody just saying exactly where they were. They say, I'm at the coffee shop at such and such place. Anyone wants to say hi?
Really,
you know?
That's not really smart.
I'd say hi at your house.
That's not really smart.
No. Anyway, I don't know. Just a complaint of mine. There's a good Twitter video. I'm going to send you the link to it. You can put it on the show notes.
Hey, dude, my daughter's like texting me, and I really want to talk to her. She wants to talk, so can we wrap it up?
We're at the past the hour point, I think.
Yeah, and the fact that she's wants to talk to me is really good, so if you don't mind.
So yeah, we'll be back on Sunday.
Yes, absolutely. And
.org/NA.
Yeah, and I've got, well, that's really weird. My there you go. For some reason my MIDI controller wasn't working. There we go. Yeah, and I'll be at the Mickey says hi.
Good.
She's listening.
Say hi to her.
Well, she's hearing, so.
Oh, she is? She's listening?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We got a fan. And you know what? She wears male HEMA underwear.
From 6 to 7. Hold on.
she wears male HEMA underwear.
As all smart money does.
Yes, of course. No, Sunday, I got this like corporate apartment that Rosie set me up with, so it'll be interesting to see how the bandwidth is, because whenever I'm in California and you're in California, basically the connection sucks, particularly if we're both on Comcast.
Yeah, I did a thing with a guy the other day on Comcast, and it just died right in the
really?
Middle.
Really? You're kidding
Comcast?
Me.
Yeah.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, oh, just shit. Right in the middle. Just we had a great connection. Boom, dead.
Was that with the... Horowitz?
This is separate. Horowitz has another issues with his connection.
Yeah, I think Horowitz has issues in general. I'm just kidding. I like him. Okay, so anyway, that was fun. Coming to you from an undisclosed hotel in Gitmo Nation East in the capital of...
Why don't you tell us where it is? You're leaving tonight.
It's in Mayfair. I'm not going to tell you. You'll have an idiot show up. I'm not going to tell you that. Absolutely. I'll Twitter it. Don't worry. Hey, I'm at this hotel. I'm Adam Curry.
And from sunny but maybe rainy Northern Silicon Valley, I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll talk to you again on Sunday right here on No Agenda.